from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the North Pacific Council looks ready to get tough on Bering Sea halibut bycatch. Locals along the Cusco want more of a say in their fisheries. And a fisheries observer meets a tragic fate on shore. All of that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported, in part, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Halibut harvests have been on the decline in the Bering Sea for years, but the amount that trawlers and catcher processors have been allowed to take, incidentally, has stayed the same. Now federal regulators have agreed to consider stiffer limits on halibut bycatch. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
This weekend, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council voted to study the impact of cutting their 10 million pound bycatch limit by as much as 50%. Councilmember Duncan Fields introduced the measure.
Unless we act and act fairly decisively as soon as possible, we may continue to face what could be an emergency in a subsequent year.
Halibut fishermen narrowly avoided a major cut to their catch limit in the Bering Sea this winter. The International Pacific Halibut Commission, which sets those limits, decided not to go ahead with the reductions, as long as their counterparts on the North Pacific Council agreed to take a second look at bycatch restrictions. Those are written into federal policy. The council has the power to make changes, and they have requested voluntary reductions across the fleet. But as Karen Pletnikoff pointed out in public testimony, the cap hasn't officially changed in over a decade.
In that time, how many fish, jobs, and dollars would the Bering Strait, the Gulf of Alaska, Southeast, and beyond have had and could have if this bycatch survived to recruitment?
Pletnikoff is a manager for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. She pointed to shore plants in Atka and St. Paul that rely on deliveries of halibut to keep business going and stand to benefit if there's less bycatch and bigger harvests. But representatives from the trawl fleet warn that tighter limits could create an economic burden on their side as well. The exact impacts aren't clear yet, but a draft study provided to the council showed that a 35% cut could cost one group of catcher processors up to $368 million, mostly from fishing less to avoid halibut. On that front, Captain John Nelson said he's not sure how much more he could do. His vessel, the Rebecca Irene, has already changed its fishing schedule and added excluder nets to let halibut out.
And we've been working with these tools a long time. The excluder really has been dialed in to be about as efficient as it can be right up to this year. Beyond this point, I do not see, in my experience, a lot of gain. Any increments of gain, which we will continue to try to make, are going to be very small.
Nelson said he does see promise in new tools, like deck sorting. Instead of going inside the vessel to be weighed and tallied, halibut bycatch is checked right on deck and thrown back if it's viable. A few boats got permission to test that method under an experimental permit over the next year. In the meantime, the North Pacific Council has pledged to work with the International Halibut Board and figure out better tools for estimating stocks and bycatch between the two of them. The reductions will come back for review during the North Pacific Council's June meeting in Sitka. They're scheduled to take final action at that time. In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
On Alaska police Tuesday recovered the body of Jessica Aker, a federal fisheries observer who went missing on a hike on a remote trail in Unalaska over the last weekend. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has a story.
33-year-old Jessica Aker is believed to have left for a hike in the Pyramid Valley area on Sunday. Heavy snow and wind set in that afternoon. It persisted on Monday as a search party made up of local police, Coast Guard, and civilian volunteers spent more than 12 hours looking for the missing woman. Aker appears to have taken a bad fall down an icy slope about 30 minutes off the trail. Police Chief Jamie Sunderland says there were clear signs of trauma.
It does appear from the evidence at the scene that this apparent fall was a major factor in her death.
A search team spotted Aker on Monday but couldn't retrieve her body or confirm her identity due to rough weather, and conditions were still treacherous when they returned Tuesday morning.
Our crew that was up there described it as very icy underneath the snow. Just to safely go up above where we located her and try and look for clues was quite hazardous due to the conditions.
Pyramid Valley is a popular recreation area with miles of hiking trails and next to no cell service. It's near Westward Seafoods, where Aker worked as a seasonal fisheries observer. She was a groundfish technician with the State Department of Fish and Game in Sitka during the rest of the year and had previously lived in Anchorage. But Sunderland says she had spent a few fishing seasons in Unalaska before.
From the descriptions of friends and family, you know, she had really traversed a lot of our island out here on foot. And, you know, she certainly had the gear on for a day hike. You know, unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like she really notified anybody where she was going and when to expect her back. And unfortunately, was also by herself.
Several days before she went missing, Aker had reportedly told a friend she wanted to check out an area near the Icy Creek Reservoir in Pyramid Valley. Rescuers traveled out to that spot on foot and by snow machine to bring Aker back to Unalaska. Police have been in touch with her family in Wisconsin. Her body will be sent to the state medical examiner in Anchorage for an autopsy. Hiking accidents are rare in Unalaska. The last one was 2 decades ago on Pyramid Peak, which rises 2,300 feet above the valley where Aker was found. A 19-year-old Coast Guard sailor, Stephen McGill, went for a hike there with a shipmate during a port call in Unalaska. McGill fell from a cliff high up on the mountain and suffered fatal injuries. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online, on demand, at kmxt.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Efforts to establish tribal co-management of Kuskokwim salmon are slowly progressing. A steering committee is in Bethel to sketch out the future of who regulates the river. As KYUK's Ben Matheson tells us, Kuskokwim fishermen are eager to be managers instead of simply advisors.
10 members of a steering committee met for the first time in Bethel Thursday. Fishermen from Nikolai at the headwaters down to the mouth began to define what they want to see in tribal co-management. Committee member Bob Aloysius of Kalskeg emphasized tribes need to be more than simply advisors.
Recommendations go to a point and there nothing happens. But we need to have authority to implement and maintain, monitor, and enforce whatever we come up with.
The Steering Committee for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fisheries Commission is being facilitated by the Association of Village Council Presidents and Tanana Chiefs Conference, building off tribal resolutions passed last year. Kuskokwim king salmon runs have been in decline for several years, and unprecedented restrictions have hit subsistence fishermen hard. That's led to conflicts among communities along different parts of the river. Jacob Black from Napakiak said for tribal management to succeed, everyone has to be on board.
Our elders used to say, there might be a lot of you from Kuskokwim or Alaska, but if you're not united, you'll never accomplish nothing. That's 100% true to me. Right now, we are not united.
The full commission someday would include representatives from all Kuskokwim tribes choosing to take part. The smaller steering committee is trying to determine next steps and outline the mission and goal. They chose Bob Aloysius and Mike Williams as interim co-chairs, while more members are expected to join. The long-term vision in some capacity includes equal footing among tribes, state, and federal managers. In the meantime, a federal demonstration project for co-management could build capacity for the change. Gene Peltola Jr., the Assistant Regional Director for the Federal Office of Subsistence Management, described a potential new committee under the Federal Subsistence Board. He says if it's structured properly, rural residents could have more input.
Well, if they were to give it, say, weighted opinion or whatever you want to call it, with that being said, is that I truly feel that the local individual would have a lot more say in management than they have had in the past.
Sky Starkey, an attorney who works for AVCP, presented a vision of how the committee could push the boundary of the law in order to maximize the co-management potential. To give it teeth, Starkey says tribes should seek broad application of a section of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, that governs subsistence on federal lands. That could force the federal board to defer to their committee's plan unless the proposal fails to meet strict criteria.
Trying to use that and trying to strengthen it so that the recommendations carry a lot of weight.
One idea is to create a new regional advisory council that replaces the fish responsibilities of two current regional committees. In the very preliminary conception, tribes would make comprehensive management plans and take responsibility for researching and monitoring fish while giving traditional knowledge equal footing. The meeting continues Friday at the Cultural Center in Bethel. A meeting for Yukon tribes is scheduled for next week in Fairbanks. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Two Alaska state senators have sent a letter protesting a new fishery on the Kenai River. Senators Mike Dunleavy and Peter Michicki sent a joint letter to the Federal Subsistence Board asking for reconsideration of a recent decision to allow a subsistence gillnet fishery in the Kenai River. The board voted in January to allow the Nanilchik Tribal Council to use a set net in the federal subsistence fishery on the Kenai. Residents of certain rural Kenai Peninsula communities, including Cooper Landing, are also eligible to apply to use a set net there. The fishery targets red salmon, but kings and other species could also be caught. Representative Les Guerra of Anchorage wrote a letter to the board last month asking for reconsideration. Alaska fishermen have 3 years before the EPA is supposed to begin regulating deck wash, bilge water, and other liquids discharged from small vessels. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill to permanently block the regulation for commercial vessels under 79 feet. Senate co-sponsors include California Democrat Barbara Boxer. The threat to the looming discharge regulation frustrates owners of commercial vessels from Alaska to Florida. Robert Zales, president of the National Association of Charter Boat Operators, let his exasperation show in testimony at a recent U.S. Senate hearing.
How do I can't even give you an answer to that question on how much rain runs off my deck on any particular day. It's rainwater that would have hit the water if it hadn't hit my boat. So what is the purpose?
Murkowski and Boxer nearly won a permanent exemption for small boats last year, but owners of larger vessels objected, saying the exemption should cover their ballast water discharge as well, but Boxer says ballast water poses more danger because it can carry invasive species from one side of the world to another.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal and Annie Ropey in Unalaska, KYUK's Ben Matheson in Bethel, and APRN's Liz Ruskin in D.C. From KMXT and Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.